This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. A local historic Route 66 landmark has found new life through the efforts of the town of Normal and a well-known Route 66 scholar. Terry Ryburn hopes the restored Sprague Super Service Station will allow her to facilitate tourism on the Mother Road.
I sort of consider myself a concierge of Route 66.
More on the opening of the restored landmark this weekend and the effort to build on the renaissance of tourism in central Illinois. Plus, the city of Peoria faces a discrimination lawsuit over its nuisance ordinance and a political spat in McLean County politics over emails. Gee, who'd have thunk that? All that and a GLT news update on the way. This is Sound Ideas on GLT.
Support for the Sound Ideas podcast comes from listener contributions to GLT, with additional support from Country Financial Representative Justin M. Boyd. Information at justinmboyd.com. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. What was once a stopping place on the Mother Road has found new life, thanks to a partnership between the town of Normal and a local Route 66 scholar, and the public is invited to attend a grand opening party to celebrate the historic location's fresh start. GLT's Laura Kennedy has more.
At the height of the Depression, Sprague's Super Service on Route 66 in Normal opened for business as a service station, a restaurant, and a garage. Decades later, the interstate happened, and the business changed hands. For a time, it was a bridal shop, before eventually sitting empty, the years and weather taking their toll on one of the few remaining vintage two-story service stations on Route 66. It took a lifelong 66 fan to turn around the building's decline, and a partnership with the town of Normal has helped secure the future of the historic building. Dan Irvin is the director of communications for the town of Normal. He says the town's purchase of the property is an investment in future Twin Cities tourism. Terry Ryburn, Route 66 fan, scholar, and the one who started this ball rolling, will be the face of Sprague's Super Service and the proprietor of Ryburn Place, a shop inside the restored building. She says she welcomed the town's investment in Sprague's as it really needed the work both she and the town put into it.
Well, they did the roof almost immediately after I bought the building. So after they purchased it, that's when they put in the new parking lot. And the parking lot had been a combination of dirt and gravel and cement and mud, and it was a mess. So they put that in, and then this spring they really kicked it in gear on the interior. And it is phenomenal. I'm so proud of the workers of the town of Normal because they gave it their all, and it really shows. And I'm going to be so happy to show it off on Saturday.
So who approached who? Did you go to the town of Normal and say, hey, do you want to buy this? Or did you guys go to Terry and say, we want to buy this?
Well, I had a good working relationship, I think, with the town of Normal. And I had talked with Mark Peterson over the years about the building and kept him up to date on what I was doing and making him aware of the importance of the building. And even though I wasn't open, obviously, I still had tourists in the parking lot constantly. So I sort of kept him abreast of that. And then I was approached by Mark Peterson, well, over a year ago. And I think it's a win-win because, first of all, I'd had sleepless nights worrying about what might happen to the building if I died. And
not to be morbid, but
no, and notice that I said if and not when. I mean, I think that's a real positive thing. So my daughters live out of state, so they're not coming back to take care of it. And besides, this is mom's thing. This is not their thing. So that gives me a succession plan, which I did not have before. And so, you know, I struggled a little bit because you have to pry your fingers away from something.
I wondered about that because you're so passionate about 66 and you really put a lot in of yourself into the work that you had done thus far. So I was wondering if it was a decision that was hard for you.
Well, yes and no. I mean, it was hard, but I realized that in order to save the building, I needed to do that, and it's been a great partnership, I think.
Well, and I suspect, Terry, that I just suspect that the feeling really both of yourself and of the town was that the town sitting back and being, you know, an interested observer, who knows, I have no doubt that with the kind of person that you are, that sooner or later we'd have gotten to this place. But I think the town's belief was, why wait?
Right.
When we have this resource as partners, we can make this happen sooner rather than later, and right, let's just do it. Partnerships abound, and public-private partnerships of all kinds ultimately create, through a synergy, something that becomes beneficial, and the town gets back way more than they put into that partnership.
What sort of anticipation do you have with regards to the impact of tourism here in the Twin Cities with this brand new partnership?
Well, I'm working very hard to get people to stay longer in Illinois, and specifically in the community. Just in the last week, I had a group of, a family from Paris, France. And
ooh la la!
Yes, and they have a month to travel the road. Well, what usually happens is people scoot through Illinois and get out west, and then they say, oh, I wish I'd spent longer in Illinois because the west is beautiful. I'm not disrespecting it, but there's an awful lot of west to travel through without stopping and talking to people. So I've been speaking with them about, you know, spend more time, make sure you go here, make sure you go there. I'm also working with the museum, the McLean County Museum of History. We have a wonderful partnership, so I direct them there if they're open at that time. I direct them to, you know, different spots down the road. Make sure you don't miss this. Make sure you don't miss that. So just this week, I've hardly gotten anything done downstairs because of the people stopping, but that's wonderful. I'm able to talk to them and, you know, encourage them to stay longer.
Dan, do you see this as benefiting the community in a general way, people coming in?
Absolutely, Laura, because imagine that you've made this commitment to travel the whole road, starting from Chicago. So you're full of the enthusiasm of this great journey that you're going to take. And I think initially, before you become jaded about it and starting to think about getting back to your life, you're at the very beginning of your vacation or your commitment to this journey. Coming down the road, you've left Chicago, maybe first thing in the morning, it's time for lunch, or maybe there's enough here that this is going to be an overnight stop. The more that we can add to the attractiveness of Bloomington Normal as a Route 66 destination, the more opportunity we have for people at least to lunch and shop here, at best, right, to spend the night here. So it is step one. The Convention and Visitors Bureau, with the support that they're giving the project, obviously recognize the tourism benefit of the spot for the community.
What about partnering with, say, the Children's Discovery Museum in Uptown Normal to do some kind of a Route 66 event? Get them while they're young, before they even get a driver's license.
Right. I had actually talked with the former director about having possibly a day trip or something to the building and do something in the backyard, and so they could learn about Route 66. There is so much potential, Laura. I'm happy to partner with anyone who wants to do that sort of activity.
And if there's one thing I've learned in 14 months with the town of Normal, it is... a family, and those partnerships and cross-programming and cross-promotion happen automatically. So right, the Normal Theater, Sprague Super Service, the Children's Discovery Museum, maybe the Parks Department, there are a lot of opportunities.
I sort of consider myself a concierge of Route 66.
I like that.
So, yeah, I think I like that too. I think I made that up. but I like to think that I'm able to direct people because I'm so familiar with both the road and the communities along the road that I'm able to say, okay, well, you're going to be here at this time. Okay, well, do that. Or, you know, have you visited our uptown? I tell them about the historic Normal Theater, and I tell them about the restaurants and the shops and all of those things. So, You know, I like to consider myself a concierge of the road.
Well, as concierge of the road, you will be hosting a party coming up on Saturday. Let's hear about that.
Yes. In conjunction with the town, we're having a grand opening on Saturday the 12th from 6 to 9 p.m. So at 6, there will be ribbon cutting, and we will unveil various things up there. It's really exciting. For instance, it is on the National Register of Historic Places, and we will unveil the plaque for that. There is also a brand new sign that's going up. No one has ever seen. It will be covered, and it will be unveiled that night. So that's something people really need to be there for, and that will be shortly after 6. And this is really exciting, and I have my fingers crossed. We're getting 3 replica pumps, and they should be arriving tomorrow to be installed in time for the event.
So they'll be there all the time then from
yes.
now on?
All the time.
Ooh,
no,
cool.
No promises that we're going to have those.
Well,
you know
you're going to have people
Saturday.
pulling in there trying to get gas.
Yeah,
you know that.
Yeah, and I'll take care of them.
Get your windshield soon,
right.
Check your oil.
We're going to have a food truck on the lot, curbside grilling, so that will be fun.
How about some music?
This is Saturday, yeah. And music on Saturday night is Wagon Load of Trouble, a local band. In fact, my favorite band in the whole world. And they'll be playing until 9 p.m. So people should come out. The shop will open after that ribbon cutting. I've been joking for the last few months. I say, come and visit me and bring money. And, yeah, people laugh like you're doing, and then I say, no, I'm serious. Bring money.
So if you're going to go to Ryburn Place, bring money.
Right. Yeah, I have, I should tell you what's in Ryburn Place when I open. Not only Route 66 gifts and memorabilia and T-shirts and various things that you can buy there. In fact, the T-shirts are specific to my shop. They're not available anywhere else. I also am featuring local artists. And I have some wonderful handmade items, hand-dyed silk scarves, handmade cards, hand-woven baskets. I mean, absolutely beautiful stuff, because I really want to support the arts through my effort with Ryburn Place.
That's Terry Ryburn, proprietor of Ryburn Place at Sprague's Super Service, along with Dan Irvin, director of communication for the Town of Normal. The grand opening of Sprague's Super Service is tomorrow at 6 p.m. I'm Laura Kennedy.
Dan Irvin's father, Morris, was inducted into the Route 66 Association of Illinois Hall of Fame. The Irvins drove along the Mother Road for many years as Pepsi distributors. You're listening to the Nelson Riddle Orchestra with a theme to this TV show, Route 66.
Support for GLT comes from Jack Batal Real Estate Group at Keller Williams. Jack and his team are committed to helping Bloomington Normal continue to thrive by giving back to GLT and other local nonprofits. Current listings at jacksguarantee.com. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Coming up, a political spat between Democrats and Republicans on the McLean County Board. The city of Peoria's nuisance ordinance is under fire for alleged racial and gender discrimination in enforcement of it. The Hope Center for Fair Housing, a Wheaton-based anti-discrimination group, has filed a federal lawsuit against the city. The city's nuisance ordinance is supposed to be used by police and landlords to facilitate evictions of people who prove to be disruptive or unsavory. But Ann Hotel telling of the Hope Center tells GLT the actual practice of the enforcement is shockingly discriminatory and limited to the south side of Peoria, where minorities are the majority.
You think of your local officials, your city officials, and your police department as being your public safety officers and there to protect you. And so then when you find instances where victims of domestic violence call for help and are found to be a nuisance and need to be evicted because they've called for help, it's shocking. It violates sort of a fundamental covenant that we have with our local public safety officers.
The city does have a legitimate goal of reducing nuisances. Is the policy poorly targeted? I mean, even if it were applied across the board, is it good policy?
If it's applied to, as I said, victims of crime or for situations that the ordinance is very broad. So, For example, if you are a parent with a child that has some behavior issues and is being truant, and you come up with a plan for trying to address some of the behavior for the truancy of when they aren't home by curfew or when they aren't home when they should be, calling the police, three calls within a certain period of time could be enough to trigger you as a nuisance, and you could potentially lose your housing. That doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. So certainly violent incidences or, you know, documented drug dealing at a property could be a target of enforcement. But the other thing is that it seems like they're only enforcing it against rental properties, and we know that homeowners can have the same demographics in terms of drug use or domestic violence or some of these other kinds of things. So there are uses, right? You want every community to be safe. I just don't think that this is appropriately targeted or appropriately enforced.
What's the effect on domestic violence victims?
Yes, for victims of domestic violence, it's hard enough to have people come forward. There are a lot of obstacles and shame in coming forward and reporting domestic violence. And so if the consequence of reporting an incident or several instances of domestic violence to the local police loses you your housing, that's just really unconscionable that somebody that's a victim would be re-victimized and lose their housing.
What are you alleging and how discriminatory the enforcement of the Peoria Nuisance Ordinance is?
There were a universe of more than 12,000 properties that could have been cited according to what their criteria is. They cited 148 of those properties, and they were almost exclusively in African-American communities or with African-American residents. 71.6% of them were nuisance citations in neighborhoods where African-Americans were the majority of the population.
How much enforcement action did not relate to drug deals or something obviously intended to be targeted by the policy?
A large percentage of the citations involved things that were not, you know, violent crime or drugs. It was a very large percentage of what the nuisance enforcement was about.
Is this the national race scape writ small, or is this unique to Peoria?
I believe that Peoria is just one example of a larger national problem. I know that the attorneys that we've worked with in this case have filed a complaint against Maplewood in Missouri for similar behaviors. And there is a Pulitzer Prize-winning book titled Evicted by Matthew Desmond. And he's a social scientist who embedded in Milwaukee for something like 14 or 16 months and found that being an African-American woman in Milwaukee with children made you as likely to be evicted as somebody who is 5 months behind in the rent. And in his book, he demonstrates some of the differences in enforcement. And so I believe his quote from his book is, "Black men are being locked up, black women are being locked out."
Obviously, you don't start out with a lawsuit. You try to work with the city. What was their response?
I don't think I can comment on that. I think that you know, any conversations that might have been made in attempts to resolve this, I would not be comfortable with disclosing.
Does the alleged discrimination run beyond the documented data?
I think what we would be interested in is if there are... We believe that there were instances where this was informal, where there weren't actual citations, but the nuisance officer might have said to the landlord, you need to get this person out or you're going to get a nuisance citation. And we would like to, for people who, one of the issues with this ordinance is that the landlord might move to evict the tenant or informally tell them that they need to leave, and the tenant doesn't know that it's based on these quote-unquote nuisance calls. So it could be that it's somebody that's a victim of domestic violence that's called for help, that there isn't a formal eviction filed, but they're told by the landlord that they need to leave. And so we're trying to see if there are other people who have been in this situation out there that we'd like them to give us a call so we can talk to them.
That sounds very difficult to capture.
Yeah.
Ann Hotelling is the director of the Hope Center for Fair Housing. The city attorney for Peoria is Don Leist. His comment for GLT is the city will vigorously defend the ordinance. Leist says neighborhood groups support the regulation and the city effort to provide a safe place to live, a nice place to live. Leist said the city will continue that effort in spite of what an out-of-town D.C.-based law firm says the city should do. Now, the Hope Center is being represented by the firm of Relman, Dane, and Colfax, and by the Sergeant Shriver National Center on Poverty Law. You can read a copy of the complaint at WGLT.org.
It's hard not to be excited about GLT's first ever bocce ball tournament. 32 two-person teams and a double elimination bracket, food trucks, beverages from Stave, and it all takes place on the grounds of Normandy Village in Normal. Is the excitement building? Are you excited? Go to WGLT.org to learn more and sign up for the first ever GLT bocce at the Village. We're excited. You excited?
Support for GLT's Sound Ideas comes from Country Financial Representative Justin M. Boyd, helping investors plan for the future and stay on track for retirement and college savings based on their unique situations and goals. Details at justinmboyd.com. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. And now, another political fight over emails, this time right here in McLean County. Local Republicans and Democrats are sparring over allegations of illegal campaigning at the county fair and a chain of emails circulating among McLean County board members. GLT's Ryan Denham is here to help unpack what happened and what this means.
So this all started on Sunday when all the members of McLean County Board got an email from a locally politically active woman about allegations that the McLean County Clerk, Kathy Michael, was mixing campaigning and county business at the fair. There was a tent set up by the local Republican Party at the fair, and right next to that was County Clerk Kathy Michael's tent. That was for county business. There was a photo shared in this email to the county board alleging that Kathy Michael's campaign materials were being used on the clerk's side over in the clerk's tent. So what happens next is as Chuck Erickson, one of the county board members, apparently sends this email or responds to this email to 12 other members of the board. So not everybody, but a lot of Republicans responding to this and attacking another member of the board for elevating it, and it kind of takes off from there. So one of the Democrats on the McLean County board, Carlo Rubistelli, alleges that Chuck Erickson's emails were a Open Meetings Act violation because he sent it to enough members of the board and they were having what's described as contemporaneous communication on a topic, which, you know, by law should be public. So Kathy Michael and Chuck Erickson, and Chuck Erickson happens to also be the head of the local Republican Party, they say there was no problem at the fair, and this is just an example of local Democrats employing what they call Chicago-style politics and a dirty trick to try to get after them. And this all just became public a couple of days ago.
So what's the bigger issue, the emails or the allegations of taxpayer money being used to campaign at the fair?
Well, it depends on who you ask, right? So Carlo Rubistelli, a Democrat on the McLean County Board, he even admits that he doesn't think that Kathy Michael was mixing taxpayer-funded or taxpayer-funded tent with campaign side. He talked about that yesterday when I interviewed him.
I think this was a misunderstanding, and it was cleared up through the natural process. And I think that's great. That means that the system is working. That constituent raises a concern, the administration in consultation with various areas and the leadership on the McLean County Board work through the details and they respond. And I think that that's exactly what played out in this case as far as I can tell.
But he did send along this allegation to other county officials. In an email that we obtained, he asks for a review of the allegations. For the Republicans, basically, they're saying that the taking of the photo inside the Republican Party tent is a dirty trick, trying to pawn that off as being inside the clerk's tent. And meanwhile, Chuck Erickson from the local Republican Party, and again, a county board member, denies that his emails were an Open Meetings Act violation because he was talking about political matters.
My communications were political in nature. And so, and I actually signed one of those emails as the party chairman. You can't discuss county business. You can discuss politics. And I did discuss politics.
But he discussed politics only with other county board members. Does that cloud the issue?
It certainly does. Carla Robustelli has pointed out there's some really blurry lines here for Chuck Erickson. When is he a county board member, and when is he the local Republican Party chairman? It's an interesting question, certainly.
How was the allegation made against Kathy Michael in the first place?
So it was made in an email that was sent by a woman named Shana Wachinski. She's active in politics locally. She is on Facebook, it's pretty obvious, she's a supporter of Kathy Michael's opponent in next year's election, a Democrat named Nikita Richards. I reached out to her yesterday for a comment, but did not hear back yet.
What does the Democrat who's challenging Michael say about this? What does Nikita Richards say?
So Nikita Richards put out a statement last night on her Facebook page, and she said to the extent of, this is just what we needed, quote, more us against them rhetoric, more divisiveness, more upstate versus downstate politics. And that's a reference to Kathy Michael's statement that she issued yesterday, alleging that this Chicago-style politics had infiltrated Bloomington Normal.
Facts matter, and so do reputations. The fact that Mr. Robustelli made no attempt to find out the facts before demanding an investigation for political gain and wasting taxpayer dollars is not what we should expect from a county board member. McLean County is not Chicago.
So Nikita Richards, in her statement on Facebook, defended Carla Robustelli for raising the Open Meetings Act issue. But notably, she did not speak to the actual allegation against Michael specifically. Again, that's maybe another indication that this was a misunderstanding or a mistaken photo that was shared around.
So how did these tents end up next to each other?
So I spoke yesterday with Mike Swartz from the McLean County Farm Bureau. So they actually run the county fair. He told me that Kathy Michael requested that specific physical location at the fair, but she would not have known ahead of time that her clerk's tent would end up next to the Republican Party's tent. So it sounds like it was maybe just a coincidence that they ended up side by side and not some grand scheme to be within inches of each other.
But they were both going for good real estate at the fair that would attract traffic.
Certainly. And the Democrats are just a couple of spots over. I was out there Saturday myself and saw it. Actually, kind of a funny thing was posted on Facebook over the weekend. The McLean County Republican Party posted a photo of their tent and a photo of the Democratic Party's tent. And the Republican one was larger than the Democratic one. And they were pointing out the size difference. So, you know, a pretty strange allusion there.
Politics.
Yeah. Right.
So maybe next year Kathy Michael should go next to the Democrat tent and avoid everything.
Yeah, maybe next year they should put some thought into maybe just keeping all these things separate. You know?
So how does this all play into next year's elections here in McLean County?
Well, that is the real issue, right? So it sounds like we're going to have 15 months of this potentially. So the election would not be until next November. There's a primary, obviously, in the spring, but the real deal is in November. So it might be this ugly all the way through. We'll see. Kind of the storylines that I'm sort of watching are certainly with the Democrats. They, you know, took a big loss with the election of Donald Trump, and locally that has certainly emboldened them, kind of a local group of Democrats, to go after some things they hadn't gone after before. So in the spring we saw them pick up some positions in Normal Township. They're running now somebody against Kathy Michael, Nikita Richards. They're even going after a county board seat out in rural McLean County. That's the Republican vice chair of the board.
Jim Solder.
Yeah, Jim Solder. So, and then separate from the party itself, you know, we've seen a rise of local activism on the left. Most recently, the creation of the Bloomington Police Review Board. That group of local activists were very visible and very vocal. On the other side of this, though, Republicans might be trying to seize this episode here to kind of animate their base, right? So if they're under attack by the Democrats, and this photo that was circulated maybe was not accurate, and actually this is a mistake or some kind of misfire, they might use that to energize their folks.
Fight against injustice.
Exactly.
That's digital content director Ryan Denham of GLT, who reported on the political spat between local Republicans and Democrats at the county fair. The primary election is in March. The general election, of course, in November of 2018. The Castle Theater in downtown Bloomington welcomes the band Lake Street Dive. That's tomorrow at 8 p.m. And the acoustic group Stone and Snow will be at the Miller Park Bandstand in Bloomington on Tuesday, August 15th from 7 to 8:30 p.m. Admission is free. Look for more arts listings on our community page at WGLT.org. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. The city of Bloomington has extended the deadline to apply for a spot on the recently approved Public Safety Citizen Review Board. The issue was debated for months, and interest in who will become part of the panel to review police investigations of their own officers is high. The new deadline is 5 p.m. Monday, August 14th. The extension came because two separate deadlines to apply had been mentioned publicly. Here are some of the public comment received over the course of public discussion of the issue.
The police complaint investigation process is flawed. It's not about where do you go and get a piece of paper. It's about what happens when you submit the piece of paper and the police investigate themselves. People don't have trust in that.
In 1997, Bloomington Normal was nationally hailed as a model community for not in our town. In 2017, can't we again be hailed as a model city in addressing systemic racism?
I feel the police have this great opportunity to help our community be together so we can help break up the divide of the hate and the racism. We can start at a local level.
But here's the thing. In the nitty-gritty world of us versus them, the bullies can be on all sides. And the bullies think they are the good guys, only protecting themselves, their friends and family, their ideas, their loop.
You've heard the data, you've heard testimony, and there are some of you that still want to call this a perception issue. I know those who have had negative interactions with the police and have not filed complaints because they don't trust the police and they don't trust the complaint process.
I have witnessed my family be referred to as wetbacks and spics and be racially profiled, humiliated, and denied privileges that others are given freely. I am one of those people who have not called the police at times when I needed help. I am one of those people who feels terror during a traffic stop, who says to myself, this won't happen to me, but then wonders if Philando Castile or Sandra Bland thought the exact same thing.
I have students who don't understand why their parents are hurt and crying after being stopped by the police, but they have to comfort them. I have a friend who stopped driving altogether in Bloomington because they were being constantly stopped and harassed by police officers. Our community, especially folks of color, are hurting.
I come from a town and from parents who told me that when there was trouble, run to the police. The police will protect you. The police are good people, and you need to trust the police. I have friends and colleagues who tell their children something very different, and often, because of their lived experience, present interactions with the police as potentially dangerous and urge their children to do nothing, nothing, nothing that might give some message to the police that they pose a danger. I find that sickening. I find that sad that my lived reality is so different from that of so many of my friends.
There is an obvious disproportionality in the enforcement that is received by people of color in this community. And no matter how much you want to deny that, the problem is there. In fact, it's been studied, it's been researched. These aren't just people's stories. Now, throughout the last presentation, I heard from the chief that there are different organizations that could just help people through the complaint process. Every organization that he mentioned are organizations that are saying that this process isn't good enough, that we need a CRB.
from my own personal experience, it is hard for us as Black people to not be afraid of them. I do not want my children to have to live in fear of those who have taken an oath to protect and serve us. Chief Hefner met my daughter at the last meeting, and he gave her some reasonably sound advice. Rather than saying, "Police are your friends, trust the police," he said, "You should not judge people until you get to know them, not even the police." And that is what I feel this community review board can provide for us.
The chief compared his department to a business. You can choose which business you go to, and if you don't like the service, you get to complain. Many of us don't have a choice about which community we live in.
I know that you didn't create racism, but make no mistake, it is absolutely your responsibility to do something about it. So let's start to bridge this divide by giving those who are most directly affected the power to help shape what policing looks like in this community. Know that I believe in your capacity to do the right thing with the power that you hold in your hands. I believe that you're loving people. Just don't forget that justice is what love looks like in public.
You heard Laura Dick, Elizabeth Kuba, Nancy Marciniak, Colleen Lucky, Cinnamon Porter, Gene Howard, Louis Gosland, Jen Carrillo, Jennifer Johnson, and Kaya Jai. More than 20 applications have come in so far for the PSCRB. The deadline to apply is the close of business on Monday. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. A group of volunteers on Bloomington's west side is standing up together to help their neighbors take a seat. 24 benches are being installed at Connect Transit bus stops at Washington and Market Streets. The first 5 already in place. More on the way. GLT's Ryan Denham asks West Bloomington Revitalization Project board member Robert Bosquez about the stories behind the benches.
So this bench project actually came about through a Illinois Wesleyan intern last year. She noticed that there was residents along the bus Connect bus line, and they were standing, had nowhere to sit. So she thought, what of a better way to build some benches so they have somewhere to sit? She received a grant from Wesleyan, and that was her idea, and we ran with it. We built about 25 benches, and we intend to feature these along Connect Transit bus stops along West Bloomington.
So who built these benches? Who are the people who actually put these things together?
So it was all volunteers. We just put a call out on our Facebook page, and we got an overwhelming response of people who just wanted to come and build. Last May, we did 2 shifts. And we had about 50 volunteers in total and built, again, like 24 benches in about 4 hours.
It sounds like we're starting to see these benches actually pop up now. They're starting to be installed on these Connect Transit routes. So tell me about where things stand as of today, and then what's next? When are we going to see more of them?
So we currently have 5 on West Washington. So there was a little delay on some of the pads, but those pads will be coming, and those pads will be laid on Market Street.
And those pads are the pads that the benches actually sit on top of?
Correct, yes, the bench pads that they'll be sitting on. So, yeah, we have 5 on Washington, and we've already done 3, and every Friday we want to feature. These benches have plaques that were purchased by community members, organizations, families, and they just dedicated it to, you know, a brother, a sister, or a mom and dad. So we want to get them involved, take a picture of them on the bench, and just share it through our social media outlets.
Yeah, so tell me a little bit more about the stories that are behind some of these benches and the dedications and the plaques that you have next to them. What are some examples of the types of stories and connections to either public transit or to the west side that you're hearing?
Sure. So our first one was actually one of the best ones. Two sisters, who their other brother moved from Iowa. In the town that he lived in Iowa, there was no public transit. So he had a hard time getting around. And once he moved here, they said that he came to life, because with Connect, he was able to get to various places in Bloomington Normal without, you know, any assistance from, you know, having to catch a ride. He would catch the bus and he would be everywhere. And they just seen him, you know, his life kind of changed and evolved, and he was just so excited to be able to get out and about. So that was one of the very first ones we did, and that was just a great story. The second one that we featured was a couple that were, their parents had met on the west side, worked on the west side, lived and have their whole family here on the west side. And so they, you know, they had passed, and they just wanted to have something to dedicate to them and let them know how just, you know, again, how perfect, not how perfect, I guess, but how they liked the west side and, again, got around with Connect Transit from the very beginning.
Yeah, can you talk kind of more generally about the important role that public transit plays for folks who live on the west side and some of these folks you're telling me stories about today?
Sure. So, you know, a lot of the, some of the residents on the west side, you know, middle, low income, maybe elderly, some disabled, have a hard time getting around. So what a better way to, you know, catch the bus. And, again, the student who started this project would see, you know, families, especially with little ones or some of the elderly that were just standing on the bus stops, had no place to, you know, just relax for 5 minutes while the bus comes. So her project was a great project. And we're seeing it now, you know, grow. We're starting to see it take off. People are taking advantage of these benches, you know, on a hot day. You just want to sit for just for, you know, a couple minutes while you catch the bus. And we just love seeing, you know, families and along these bus routes just taking a little break before they catch the bus.
This is GLT's Sound Ideas. I'm Ryan Denham. I asked Robert to show me some of the benches already in place on Washington Street.
This is a gold route. This 2x4 on top will be painted gold. So people will know, hey, okay, this is the gold route. And then we're adding a stencil on the front of it, you know, whether it be West Bloomington Revitalization Project or just so they know who built these and who's responsible for these.
What do you think it says about the community that you've built here with WBRP that you're able to get, you know, a bunch of volunteers to show up and build 25 benches and actually pull this thing off and put it all together? I think it's a pretty special thing.
Yeah, well, Bloomington Normal is a great community. I mean, period. There's no questioning that. Anytime we do any public outreach here at WBRP and the Tool Library, whether it be building benches or building beds, we get great support from the community. We're invested here at West Bloomington. We recently purchased a building, so we're here to stay. We're not going anywhere. This is our home. And a lot of our volunteers, our board members, live or work in the west side of Bloomington. So anytime we reach out to the community, help comes pouring in.
Robert, anything else we should know about the benches?
No, just keep on the lookout on our Facebook page, the Tool Library, on our Instagram page as well, the Tool Lib. We'll be featuring one every Friday for, you know, early fall, to at least early fall. So keep a lookout on those. And, you know, if you want any more information on how to get involved in either volunteering or just want more information about us, you can always shoot us an email, thetoollibrary@gmail.com. Or come visit us at our new location, 724 West Washington.
That's Robert Bosquez from the West Bloomington Revitalization Project. I'm Ryan Denham.
You can see more stories behind the benches on the Tool Library's Instagram. That's at thetoollib. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. A North Central Illinois tourist attraction is drawing record numbers of people, but those people don't always pick up after each other. And with state budget cuts, Starved Rock State Park, an hour north of Bloomington Normal, needs a little private help. IPR's Jenna Dooley reports.
Six-year-old Leo Mancuso of Oswego enjoys Starved Rock State Park like many visitors, jumping across small streams and gazing up at monstrous rocks. But there's another side to the popular tourist spot, trash.
A water bottle.
Yeah.
You got the water bottle.
The big one.
Yep, let's keep going.
It's no surprise to his mother, Becky Mancuso, who brought along a large trash bag for this hike.
I used to go all the time when I was in high school with my friends, and I don't remember the trash like that back in the 90s. So I was pretty devastated when we went on the main trails and trying to take pictures of them in the canyons by waterfalls, and it was just trash everywhere.
Nicholas Donka of DeKalb shares her view. That's why he started the Starved Rock Volunteer Cleanup Crew.
My family and I just came out here for a walk and saw a lot of garbage. So it kind of takes away from the natural beauty of the park. So I looked for a Facebook page, didn't see one, so I figured I'd start one.
Kelly Lavoy of Sandwich says the trash comes in all forms.
Candy wrappers, diapers, bottles of water,
some beer cans, some bags of dog poop, and just garbage everywhere. I've been hiking out here for probably 34 years and stuff, and it used to always be nice, and anymore, you know, we go and it's just covered in garbage, and you hate to see people not caring.
It's a welcome effort for Carrie Novak, superintendent of Starved Rock State Park.
Been sure to help for a long time. There's over 14 miles of trails in this area, and to get over them on a regular basis is just physically impossible. So groups like this are just a huge help to us.
He estimates the staff is about half the size it was a decade ago, but there have been a growing number of visitors.
The budget impasse had an impact, because it was difficult to replace people during that period of time, but it's an erosion that's been going along for quite a while.
Why not just add more trash cans along the trails? Novak says it's more complicated than that.
So you're talking about being a couple of miles into these spots and having to carry that out, which you can't do all the time. The other thing is, if you leave a trash can somewhere, the raccoons and the other animals get into it and scatter it all out. So, a trash can almost has to be picked up every day, otherwise you've got a bigger mess.
Becky Mancuso's 10-year-old son Jackson says he has a few words ready to go if he ever comes face-to-face with a litter bug.
I would say to just stop. You really shouldn't do that. It's hurting the environment, and just go recycle it or whatever you do with, the water bottle that you have. If it's compostable, compost it. Come on.
Oh, I'm raising my children. Very proud.
His mom beams with pride and offers her own advice.
Stop being lazy. Clean up after yourselves. This is important. It's important for our kids. And, those water bottles, those Gatorade bottles, it's going to take them over 1,000 years to break down.
The group is looking for more volunteers and plans to organize the cleanups at least once a month. I'm Jenna Dooley.
Starved Rock has been a major ornament to the state's tourist and recreational landscape for nearly a century. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. The Illinois Shakespeare Festival's 40th season is in the books. The final shows happen tonight and tomorrow. Let's look back at an imaginative and musical interpretation of the Bard's comedy of love, laughter, and magical trickery in an enchanted forest. GLT's Laura Kennedy has more with the lead actors in A Midsummer Night's Dream.
Nissy Sturgis and Jordan Cawftry are well met by moonlight. On stage and off, the Illinois Shakespeare Festival actors share the stage in A Midsummer Night's Dream this season. And off stage, they're united in marriage and proud parents of 3-year-old Owen. Sturgis and Cawftry have lived with this tune-filled version of Shakespeare's beloved comedy for some time now. Well known as a musical adapter of Shakespeare, Cawftry was working at the Arkansas Shakespeare Festival with Robert Quinlan when the director invited him to make music in Midsummer. Now this unique staging has come to the Illinois Shakespeare Festival, with Quinlan again at the helm, Sturgis as Tatiana and Hippolyta, and Cawftry playing Puck, and playing the music he wrote specifically for this renowned romantic romp.
It's such a magical, kind of fantastic play, and it involves, fairies and spells. So we talked about the idea of having the spells and the magic be music. That's where it started, and it kind of bloomed and blossomed from there.
It just really sets the scene for all the different worlds, because you have the court, you have the forest, you have the world of the fairies, you have all these different things that sort of merge together, and when you have this thread of music throughout, it unifies things, and it also helps get it more specific, and it creates a delight that the audience can follow a thread through. And in fact, one of the songs, if I can share this, that begins the show, it's called the I Love You Song, or an I Love You Song. I actually wrote for our son when he was first born. I would sing this to Owen, our son, and then Jordan adapted it and started intertwining the...
Adding all these other parts.
Yeah, all these parts and Shakespeare inside it, and now it's this beautiful round that's so joyful and begins the show in this just really buoyant and personal way.
Yeah.
It sounds like an extraordinary collaboration between yourselves and Shakespeare.
I know.
Yes,
he's been one of our greatest friends. Truly, throughout our lives, and this art and through this strange world of the theater that has been such a home and has brought us some of the best people with whom we could ever hope to share our time. Shakespeare has been this constant of perspective about humanity. There's no situation that can come up in the news or just day to day in relationships that you can't look back to and think, oh, people have been dealing with this through all time. And to have someone who's interested in exploring that with you, Shakespeare, through all of his plays, really goes in depth with the human psyche and the human heart and has this great sense of play. I mean, making up all these words, and everyone immediately just, it's for all of us, and we connect and feel like our relationship has been strengthened and supported by exploring his work.
For the music in A Midsummer Night's Dream, how would you guys classify it? Or does it defy classification?
I write other songs as well, and I've kind of started calling my genre of music folk-ish.
I like that.
I mean, the instruments that we use, the instruments that I play, I play Puck in the show, and the instruments that Puck plays are the ukulele and the guitar and the mandolin. So kind of folk-ish instruments, but with different genre. It feels like different genres come along. I mean, it's set.
You borrow sounds from all over.
From all over, yeah. And we've kind of been working through, I mean, some of the early renditions of some songs had sort of almost like a gospel feel, and some of them have a rock.
And that was more for Arkansas, and we thought, okay, well, let's where are we now with this company, and what do we want to say at this point? And so then you can adapt.
Yeah. It's like a living play.
Yeah.
You're
exactly.
Making the changes as it moves around.
Right. And adding songs and taking some songs away. There are some songs that have kind of almost a rock and roll feel, and some that have sort of a jaunty like 30s or 40s feel. It is kind of all over the map, which is great.
Well, you've got your mandolin with you.
I do.
Can we hear something?
Well, yeah. I thought I'd play one of my favorite songs.
Mine too.
Nice.
What's it called?
It's called All Shall Be Well.
Okay.
On the ground, sleep sound.
A Midsummer Night's Dream closes this evening at Ewing Theater. Thanks for choosing Sound Ideas on WGLT Normal, made possible with listener contributions at WGLT.org. Our website is also where you can find the full Sound Ideas podcast, along with the individual stories and interviews today, thanks to Ryan Denham and Laura Kennedy. This is 89.1 FM, WGLT Normal, Bloomington Normal's public media.
And the country proverb knows.